are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, October 4th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. I'm wearing my soft collared shirt, Zumbas, and loafers, penny loafers this week. On the program today, from Chapo Trap House, Virgil Texas will be with us soon. Meanwhile, in the wake of yesterday's Intel hearing, text messages show Ukrainian extortion conspiracy. Supreme Court now looking at a Louisiana trap law that could leave only one abortion doctor in the entire state. Biden's third quarter fundraising raises more questions than funds. Warren releases her labor plan, Bernie to participate in the October debate. Meanwhile, Rick Perry announces his resignation, coincidentally under subpoena regarding Ukraine and more. IRS whistleblower report reportedly focuses on a political appointee at Treasury interfering in Trump's tax audit. And is Trump's trade war over dirt on Biden? Unemployment drops again, but wages are still stagnant. And Nydia Velasquez intros a $32 billion bill to save NYCHA. Won't go anywhere, but it's good to have people talking about this. Elizabeth Warren turns out to be a cougar, and we will get to the baby eating. All this and more on today's program. Yes, folks, it's just getting... yesterday, and we will get to this. Yesterday, we had mentioned that Kurt Volker, the unpaid special envoy to Ukraine, was headed in to a closed-door session with the Intel committee. And apparently, he was in there for like 8 or 9 hours. And over the course of the day, some stuff sort of came out of that committee room. But by the end of the day, there were extensive text messaging threads that we will go through later in the program, or maybe actually soon, that show basically a criminal conspiracy. A criminal conspiracy involving not just and there was a tweet by the chairman of the Federal Elections Commission. She tweeted this out. She's like, I can't believe I have to say this, but let me make something 100% clear to the American public and anyone running for public office. It's illegal for any person to solicit, that means to ask for, accept, or receive anything of value from a foreign national in connection with a U.S. election. This is not a novel concept, she writes. Electoral intervention from foreign governments has been considered unacceptable since the beginning of our nation. Our founding fathers sounded the alarm about foreign interference, intrigue, and influence. They knew when a foreign government seek to influence American politics, it's always to advance their own interests, not America's. Anyone who solicits or accepts foreign assistance risks being on the wrong end of a federal investigation. Any political campaign that receives an offer of a prohibited donation from a foreign source should report that to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. She wrote that in June, retweeted it again. But the issue here is not just that Donald Trump solicited from the Ukraine dirt on Joe Biden. It's not that he may have done the same thing with China, and God knows whom else he did it about or for or what. But it's also that he held back funds that were appropriated by Congress for Ukraine. He extorted the Ukrainian president, is what you would call it. I think maybe extortion, blackmail, maybe, but I think it's extortion.
Extortion.
It's called deals.
And it's deals. It's deals, but it's also illegal deals. You can sell weapons on the black market. It's a deal. It's illegal. And let's go through this now, actually. This is as good a time as any to go through these, because these are really stunning. These are text messages between, and I will go through it quick because this is sort of a little bit weedy and a little bit complicated, but I think I can make this somewhat straightforward. There are about four or five players involved in this. One is Kurt Volker. He is the special envoy to Ukraine. The other is former Ambassador Bill Taylor, former ambassador to Ukraine. You know, once they're involved in a country, they still have their relationships and they're called upon to help out in certain situations. There's another guy, Gordon Sunderland, who is the U.S. ambassador to the EU, also owns some hotels, and apparently is just a buddy of Donald Trump's. Then, of course, we have Rudy Giuliani. Those are the main players. And so this starts on July 19th. Oh, there's one other guy, I should say, Audrey Yermak, who is a top advisor to President Zelensky. Remember, Zelensky is the former sort of comedic actor who managed to win the presidency. Seems to be actually a pretty intelligent guy. But you know, in the midst of a war where Russian-backed, I guess, separatists, I don't know how else to characterize it. That's probably somewhat inaccurate, but some would argue a civil war, kills thousands of people in his country. And he is looking for this money that is for weapons to protect them. It is part of basically a relationship that we agreed to with Ukraine after they gave up their nuclear weapons and were worried about a deterrent from Russia. And we should say it's not clear that the Ukrainians realized that the money was being held up. That is not a defense. If I fire a gun at Matt and he's got headphones on and doesn't realize I've tried to shoot him, I'm still guilty of attempted murder. Right? It's not legal for me to do this, even if I am wrong about the awareness that the other party has. And it's still unclear whether they knew or didn't know. They just assumed it was coming. But it's quite clear from these exchanges that on the U.S. side, support, meetings, anything was a function of them basically saying, we're going to dig into Joe Biden. So Aunt Audrey Yermak is the other. So it starts here. Is on July 21st, we're going to start with. I'm going to skip around just a little bit. Bill Taylor texting with Gordon Sunderland. Remember, Bill Taylor, former ambassador to Ukraine. Gordon Sunderland, just this guy who apparently is like a Trumpster trying to get in on this, representing the White House.
Total deal maker.
So Bill Taylor says, Gordon, one thing, Kurt, this is Kurt Volker, the special envoy now in Ukraine, and I talked about yesterday was Sasha Danielik's point that President Zelensky is sensitive about Ukraine being taken seriously, not merely as an instrument in Washington domestic reelection politics. Okay, so for some reason, Zelensky is now feeling like he might be just an instrument in the 2020 election.
Just for fighting corruption?
You're so much more than that.
Gordon Sunderland says, absolutely. But we need to get the conversation started and the relationship built, irrespective of the pretext.
What? That's not the word you
so
want
in
there,
other
buddy.
Words, in other words, get it does whatever. We need this stuff.
Yeah, the one that matters is me.
I am worried.
One that matters.
Gordon Sunderland says, I'm worried about the alternative. The alternative is that Trump cuts off Ukraine. Okay, so we go through some other stuff. Rudy is involved now. Rudy, for some reason, Rudy is involved. The president's lawyer is involved. The president's lawyer is only interested in either creating some false narrative about 2016 or about helping the reelection in 2020. Period. So let's jump to July 25th, 2019. This is ahead of a planned phone call between Trump and Zelensky. Volker is advising Audrey Yermak, Zelensky's advisor. Good lunch. Thanks. They had lunch. Heard from White House, assuming President Z, Zelensky, convinces Trump that he will investigate slash, quote, get to the bottom of what happened in 2016, end quote. We will nail down a visit to Washington. Good luck. See you tomorrow. In other words, he's got to tell Trump that he's going to do this stuff. And then we'll be able to set down the dates in which they will meet.
It's a classic if-then statement.
Exactly. Exactly. So let's jump to August 9th now. State Department officials discuss a White House visit and a Ukraine statement. They want the statement because the statement is going to leverage and just be enough on some level for the domestic purposes that Donald Trump has. Ambassador Volker has the following exchange with Ambassador Sunderland about arranging a White House meeting after the Ukrainian president makes a public statement. Morrison, this is Scott Morrison, I believe, from the National Security Council, who deals with Europe. Morrison, ready to get dates as soon as Yermak confirms. And Volker says, oh, great. So Sunderland is dealing with the White House, right? And Morrison said, like, I'm ready. Morrison, we're going to set the date for the meeting as soon as Yermak confirms. And Volker's like, oh, excellent. How did you sway him?
A smile emoji.
Right. Yeah, that's great. How did you convince him to do this? Well, Gordon says, I'm not sure I did. I think POTUS, President of the United States, really wants the deliverable. The deliverable.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
The anti-corruption.
Deliverable.
Moves. Anti-corruption. Deliverable.
And Volker says, okay, does he know that? Meaning that Yermak knows that? Gordon Sunderland, yep. And Gordon Sunderland says, clearly lots of conversations going on. And Volker says, okay, that's good that it's coming from two separate sources. So there are, you know, you're getting multiple directions coming at the at Zelensky saying, you got to do this. And then Gordon says, okay, to avoid misunderstandings, it might be helpful to ask Audrey for a draft statement, embargoed, of course, so that we can see exactly what they propose to cover. In other words, we want to see the statement that they're going to put out, because it would be a bad situation if Zelensky gave a statement and said, we're going to get to the bottom of this. You know, Joe Biden is innocent, or not bring up the words Joe Biden. That might be a problem. Even though Z does a live presser, they can still summarize in a brief statement. Thoughts? Volker, agree. So let's get a draft to make sure that they're on the same page as us. That the deliverable is going to be what we want it to be.
Just to make sure the secret messages were received.
Skipping ahead to August 10th now. Zelensky's aide, Audrey Yermak, pressed Volker for a date for the White House visit before committing to a statement announcing an investigation. They don't even trust Trump. So they don't want to go out and give the statement And then have Trump say, oh, well, I'm not going to visit now. And you're not getting your money. So Yermak says, hi, Kurt, please let me know when you can talk. I think it's possible to make this declaration and mention all these things which we discussed yesterday, which we now know. Volcker's delivering this. Sunderland is delivering this message.
This is like the pre-scene.
But it will be logical, I think, to do after we receive a confirmation of a date. We inform about date of visit and about our expectations and guarantees for future visit. Let's discuss it. And then Volcker says, it's late. We'll discuss it later. Okay. And then later in the conversation, he says, Yermak says, once we have a date, we'll call for a press briefing, announcing upcoming visit and outlining vision for the reboot of U.S.-Ukraine relationship, including, among other things, Burisma, which is the name of the oil company that Hunter Biden sat on the board of, and election meddling in investigations.
So once we have this thing, we'll do this.
Right. Man. So Ukraine is also saying this too. They just don't trust. This is like one of those like things like show up on the dock, you show me the money, we give you the diamonds. But it's going back and forth here because the diamond guy doesn't trust the money guy.
They're like the world's least subtle mafia guys.
Well, they realize at one point, and you'll find out when they start to freak out a little bit. August 13th now, Kurt Volcker. This is after his outreach to Rudy Giuliani. And Giuliani, Volcker, and Sundland on August 13th had the following exchange regarding the proposed Ukrainian thing. This is Volcker and Sundland. This is after they've talked to Rudy. Special attention should be paid to the problem of interference in the political process of the United States, especially with the alleged involvement of some Ukrainian politicians. In other words, you have to pretend that this whole thing with Giuliani, who has this whole narrative about Ukraine being the actual meddler in the elections with the help of Democrats in 2016, trying to frame Russia, this has to be in this. We intend to initiate and complete a transparent, unbiased investigation of all available facts and episodes, including those involving Burisma and the 2016 elections, which in turn will prevent the reoccurrence of this problem in the future. That, what Volcker is proposing, is what the Ukrainians should say. In fact, take this paragraph I'm giving to you, Gordon, and we're going to send this to Audrey. What do you think about it? And Gordon says, perfect. Let's send to Audrey after our call. So they have just said, this is the deliverable we want them to actually put out and release.
I'm pretty sure it's Andre, but I like it that you keep calling him Audrey.
Oh, it's Andre. Andre, right. Sorry.
Audrey wants the docs.
Andre.
I bet they do call him that.
It's Andre.
Sam's very excited.
Don't correct
his pronunciation right now.
And so confirming desire to reference 2016 election in Burisma on August 17th, a couple of days later, they have the following exchange in which they discussed their message to Ukraine more. Do we still want Z, that's Zelensky, to give us an unequivocal draft with 2016 and Burisma? That's what Sundland says. And Volcker says, that's the clear message so far. And that message is coming from the White House. And Volcker saying, I'm hoping we can put something out there that causes him to respond to that. And Sundland says, okay, unless you think otherwise, I'll return Andre's call tomorrow and suggest they send us a clean draft. So in other words, send us another one. Let's take a look at it. Let's make sure that we're talking about Burisma and we're talking about 2016. These are the two things we want. We want Biden for 2020 and we want an undercut of the Mueller investigation. Then on August 28th, Ukrainian official shares press report of the U.S. withholding military assistance. Andrei Yermak says to Volcker, need to talk with you. And then he drops in a link to this Politico piece, which says Trump holds up Ukraine military aid meant to confront Russia. And this is from August 28th in Politico. it's clear that Trump just did it unilaterally. No one else understood why. You had Republican senators writing letters saying, you can't hold up that military aid. Why are you doing it? And then Virkel says, hi, Andre. Absolutely. When is good for you? So later, on August 30th, Taylor, this is the former ambassador to Ukraine, informs Volker that Trump has canceled his visit to Warsaw, where he was supposed to meet Zelensky. And so Volker and Sondland try and figure out an alternate plan for Pence to meet Zelensky on September 1st. Bill Taylor writes, trip canceled. Volker, hope vice president keeps the balat and tees up the White House visit. Keeps up the bilateral communications and tees up a White House visit. And then Volker says, and hope Gordon and Perry still going. This is Perry, the now resigning Secretary of Education. And Sondland says, I am going. Pompeo is speaking to the president today to see if he can go. No, not you, Mike. You're not allowed. And then Bill Taylor says, are we now saying that security assistance and White House meetings are conditioned on investigations? Bill Taylor's getting a little bit upset on September 1st. Like, hey, wait a second. And Gordon Sondland says, of course not. No, he doesn't say that. He says, call me. Yep.
It's like when your friend texts you for drugs and you're like, call me.
Exactly. Now, remember, on August 8th, you had Sondland and Volker talking about, Sondland talking about they need the deliverables, right? They need the deliverables. Just, I want you to keep that in mind, because now between August, when he says we need the deliverables, there it is. Not sure I did. I think POTUS really wants the deliverable. That's August 9th. Between August 9th and September 9th, what changes? Well, there are press reports of them holding up the thing, and you senators are starting to look into this and what's going on here. Bill Taylor says on September 8th, the nightmare is they give the interview and they don't get the security assistance. The Russians love it, and I quit. In other words, you got to show up with the cash if they're going to bring you the diamonds. And if they give the diamonds and they don't get the cash, then it's a crap show. But meanwhile, on August 9th, remember, Gordon Sondland said, POTUS wants the deliverables. Bill Taylor, the guy who's bummed out about all of this now, says, the message to the Ukrainians and Russians we send with the decision on security assistance is key. With the hold, that's the hold on the money, we've already shaken their faith in us, thus my nightmare scenario. And Bill Taylor says, counting on you to be right about this interview, Gordon. And Gordon says, Bill, I never said I was right. I said we are where we are, and I believe we have identified the best pathway forward. Let's hope it works. And Bill Taylor says, as I said on the phone, and this is where Bill Taylor realizes this is going to be absolutely nasty, because we're going to get caught. And I want to make it clear where I was in this. As I said on the phone, because you do not put this in print unless you want it in print. Like, this is a very conscious thing. As I said on the phone, and I can tell you that from someone who has attempted to threaten litigation against people, this is what you do. You recount it. As I said on the phone,
I'll sue you.
As I said on the phone, I think it's crazy to withhold security assistance for help with a political campaign. And Gordon Sondland, who a month earlier, before this whole thing starts to blow up in everybody's face, realizes that Bill Taylor's setting him up, and he writes back, Bill, I believe you are incorrect about President Trump's intentions. The president has been crystal clear. No quid pro quos of any kind.
I hate those.
The president is trying to evaluate whether Ukraine is truly going to adopt the transparency and reforms that Zelensky promised during his campaign. I suggest we stop back and forth by text. If you still have concerns, I recommend you give Lisa Kenna or S a call to discuss with them directly. In other words, holy crap, Bill Taylor's wearing a wire. That's what he realizes. And that's what's going on there. And that's where we're at. And that all came out yesterday with Volker. And I think you're going to see them fall in a moment. Now, let me just take a break here to do some sponsors, and then we're going to bring
it up. Well done, Rachel.
Oh, so good.
Very excited.
I don't know if, like, you've just broken my brain, Sam, or what, but I find this chapter very compelling.
This is not even the smoking gun. This is the watching the gun fire.
I like the scramble. I like to, like, whoa.
But before we do any more, one of today's sponsors is News Voice, which is the first ever entirely open crowdsourced and democratized platform for news. You can download the app at newsvoice.com/majority. As you know, before I sit down and do any of this stuff, I look at three different versions of every story because you're always going to get a different take. And because you've got, most of the news, at least the mass media owned by five massive corporations, it's crucial that you understand what the premise, what the assumptions are before you get the news from your source. And the way that you do that is through an app like News Voice, which allows you to not only pull in your own aggregate of news sources, but you can do international ones, you can do corporate ones, you can do local, you can do independent media. You've got access to every side of the story. It's fueled by a community of users who go on to News Voice platform. They fact check, they submit stories, sources that are missing, they upvote stories, and they write story summaries. You can also comment on stories and debate politics if you want with members of the community. And through staying active in the community, you can level up and earn perks on the platform. The News Voice play feature lets you listen to your personal news feed every day. Customizable audio news playlists. It's your own personally tailored radio station for news. News Voice is a next generation news aggregator, social media platform that values transparency, good journalism, and productive political discussions. Totally free access by going to newsvoice.com/majority. We have a link underneath this video. If you're watching on YouTube, we'll put it in the podcast description as well. And lastly, Jamie, when you go back to Mexico, Babbel. It's the language learning app that's going to get you speaking a new language. In your case, if you go to Mexico, you want to speak Spanish quickly and with confidence.
Oh, you don't say.
They have 14 different languages. So you can do Spanish, you can do French, Italian, German. I got to check out, what are the other languages they have? I bet you they have some version of Chinese, maybe. It's designed to quickly get you speaking your new language within weeks. The lessons are also, these are not like, some type of algorithm translation machine. 100 language experts, real people, they set up these lessons for you. They're engaging, they're convenient, they last only 10 to 15 minutes. You'll learn through interactive dialogues so you can perfect your pronunciation and accent. I could probably use this for English.
I have some of the languages here too, by the way.
What else?
You got some French, Italian, Portuguese, Swedish, Turkish, Dutch, Polish, Indonesian, Russian, Danish, and Norwegian.
Damn.
But then no Chinese.
Wow. All right.
Mandarin.
Babbel is available as an app or online. Your progress will be synced across all your devices, which is great. Be bold. Learn a new language with Babbel. And here are the easy steps that you can take to learn this new language. Go to Babbel.com, Babbel.com. Download the app. Select the language of your choice. Try it for free. That is Babbel, Babbel.com. Babbel, speak a new language with confidence.
I might actually try that.
Should. It's free. Free to try it.
I'm real hung up on the subjunctive tense right now. It's the bane of my existence.
I don't even know. Is that like the I have had heard? Is that what it is?
Virgil? No, it's like about something that may or may not happen.
It's weird. It's like hypothetical tense.
It might have happened.
Bernie would have won.
We have it. No,
that would be in the subjunctive.
That's not the subjunctive. That's joining additional.
Joining us now, Virgil Texas. Virgil, welcome to the program.
As always, a pleasure to be back. I also got screwed up on the subjunctive and I gave up.
You know, people can understand me. It's fine.
I think subjunctive is like one of those psychoanalytic concepts that just means whatever you want it to mean.
Right.
Like the rhizome.
Like the what?
The rhizome.
What is the rhizome?
It's a model of culture. I don't know. It means whatever you want it to mean. That's it. I just explained it.
A model of culture.
Or
okay,
the or the or the spectacle.
Oh, the spectacle. Yeah. All right, now I have a better sense.
Whenever something bad happens, it's, oh, the spectacle did it.
I understand.
That's now you're...
So it's something that transcends, and it's sort of like an overlay that exists over the culture on some level that is not necessarily... it's the structure. It's the superstructure. Structure.
Now you get it. You are a psychoanalyst now.
Okay, beautiful. My sense is, from your demeanor, that you're here with a book. Is that right?
I am here with a book... And as you know, I wrote a book, and yes, it was a New York Times bestseller.
You did great. The thing about you as an author, hugely generous, because you allowed other people to take a little bit of credit as well.
I did. I shared a byline on that one. Well, paperback edition came out,
Hold it up, you can get it now.
Here you go.
Wow. You know what? I think I have the hardcover, but I think I'm going to go for the paperback because It looks like, did you guys now purposely make it look like one of those little red manifesto?
That was the conceit. Well, you know, if you're an author, you don't design your own book cover. You basically get whatever they give you.
Is that right?
Yeah. We didn't get like options or something, but we gave like design concepts, like a mood board.
My experience was literally that was the only thing. I would meet with my editors, and the only thing they would talk about was the cover. Like, we went through many, many covers. Because the book business has changed.
I guess so, yeah.
Well, I like the cover. I mean, it's good.
Oh, thank you.
Chapel Guide to Revolution.
I mean, I like both the covers, to be honest with you. The guys like the other this cover more.
Yeah, I like this one. I got to say, I like it. But
we'll see if the American consumer likes it.
Well, that's the important thing. We'll see. And that's available now at...
That will be available in 2 weeks. You can pre-order it now. And we will be having a paperback release event in 2 weeks in New York City.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's exciting.
Yeah, I don't remember the rest of the details, but it's happening.
No, I understand, of course. Now,
so if you miss the official, the hardcover release event at the Strand, you know, if you're a fake friend, you know, maybe you can come crawling in hands and knees to our paperback release event.
I personally only go to paperback releases.
Really? Why?
Because I want there to be proof of concept before I get engaged in something like that. I want to make sure that it's already, if it gets to paperback, then we know that it was a success. I know that based upon my own book, which did not get to paperback. I don't think so.
I thought they just take the hardcovers that weren't sold and just rip off the binding and put it in paper. No, I'm serious. Isn't that how they do it? Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Because we didn't, they didn't do any new printing for this one. They didn't ask us to write like an introduction to the paperback edition or something because of some production reason.
Really? That's weird.
It's a weird industry.
It is a weird industry, but let's not talk about that anymore because we'll bring it up at the end again. But
we'll be hearing more about it.
But let's. I do want to talk about, and we'll get to the eating the babies. We'll get to all that stuff little bit later.
Great.
The LaRoucheites. But now that we have you here, let me get your take on impeachment before we go any further.
You know that Sondland guy, the other guy in the transcript. You know who that is?
He owns like some hotels.
Yeah, he's like a hotel millionaire from Oregon.
And he got appointed ambassador to,
to the EU.
Of course.
And he's just like a millionaire donor. You know, he's just a guy who bought an ambassadorship and gave millions to Trump's inaugural. So it was like, okay, that's just a prestige position. That's just so that you're a rich asshole and you get to be called the honorable for the rest of your life.
Right.
Why is he being trusted to do the crimes?
Well, I think it's because he's not a professional. Because I think that if he was a professional ambassador, like the EU, there are some, all presidents appoint people like this, right? But they usually do it to like Monaco.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you'll do some country that we may never have to call you in the 4 years. We may not, you know, you just keep doing what you're doing and we may never even have to contact you. To get the EU is, I think, is probably a little bit more relevant a position. But I think it's because for the very reason that he's probably not qualified, is that like, oh, he's just a guy. He's just going to be doing, he's a bag man.
He's a hotel guy.
Yeah,
I guess. I mean, normally if you
they take hotel guys seriously in this administration.
If you have one of the important ones, like an ambassador to the Court of St. James, normally you have a career civil servant do that, someone who knows what the hell they're doing.
Right.
But Trump obviously doesn't trust the State Department, and he's probably right to. They all hate his guts, and they right. think he's a maniac because he is. So all of the important roles that you're supposed to give to smart people have just gone to donors. Like a Woody Johnson is now the ambassador to the Court of St. James.
Right. Why would you trust this guy? I don't know. Who else are you going to trust?
That's the thing. Trump doesn't have... He doesn't have Haldeman, you know. He doesn't have a Chuck Colson. He doesn't have any competent bagmen.
That's right.
At all. And, you know, I was thinking about this the other night because... Like, my overall take so far is I'm really bored with this because it just sounds like it's the same. It's a reboot. It's the same damn story from 2017. It's every single thing from that time, like right down to the inscrutable Russian names that I don't understand.
I was saying Audrey instead of Andre for a long time.
Everything's the same, and it's just it's. I mean, I know there's something real to it. I'm not trying to downplay that, and I'm just living in the spectacle zone where I see, you know, the same kind of self-congratulating, backpatting, how dare you, sir, journalism happening, or Chuck Todd, you know, giving an indignant monologue, something
right.
like that. And I think, I saw this before. I saw this 2 years ago. You could be taking clips, showing me clips from MSNBC from 2017 about the need to impeach the president, how it's gone too far, and, oh, Republicans are going to wake up and come to our side. And I would not know the difference. So like on one level as an entertainment, as a new plot, you know, it's like get better writers. The fact that it's a country that abuts Russia is okay. It just doesn't sound new enough. If we're like, Burma or something, like Trump did a quid pro quo with the prime minister of Burma, that could be fun. That's like tigers and a jungle adventure, something like that. But now it's just back to Russia.
Right. The mise-en-scène is very similar.
$500 word. You know, it's funny you should say that, Virgil, because I feel like it's much funnier than it was the last time around. Was I just not paying attention before? Was it funny before?
It was not funny before. It was boring.
The amazing thing about this is exactly, I mean, you're right. It is like, but it's like, hey, we did one that looked back on collusion. Let's do a sequel that is actually they're colluding in the future. And that's what this is.
Yeah.
I mean, but we didn't have what we have now because you've got people like Volcker who get wrapped up into this, who at one point go like, hey, wait a second. I'm not going down with the ship here and I'm going to go in and I'm going to give this stuff up. You've got guys like Bill Taylor who is like clearly like.
So just want to be clear. You want me to do a crime.
Right.
You would like me to do treason.
Exactly. And I ask because I think there are broad swaths of politically engaged people who don't care about this.
Yeah.
And, you know, as opposed to like broad swaths of people who are not politically engaged, who don't care, which is, you know, that's par for the course on some level.
Yeah, right.
But
I mean, a lot of it is, I think, the hangover from the entire Mueller saga, where for years you heard about, you know, this is Trump is uniquely dangerous and he's corrupt and he colluded with a foreign power in order, and it's treason and all that stuff. And just wait for the Mueller report to come out, and it's a drip, 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 and they're going to take him down, and vote. You know, really, you have to make sure we elect Democrats to Congress in 2018, and they're going to hold him accountable. They're going to impeach him, and then Pelosi takes the gavel, and they don't impeach him, and right. she says, "I'm not going to impeach him." And then the Mueller report comes out, which, you know, Reach really lays it out that the firing James Comey was obstruction of justice. It absolutely was. I don't think anyone disagrees on that point. Anyone like actually serious and honest about it, because he fucking said so himself. And after that, it was like, okay, whatever, that story's done. Let's move on to a new thing. So there's a little bit of boy who cried wolf there, isn't
yes,
there?
Yes, I think so. But now we do actually have impeachment hearings.
Those transcripts that just broke last night, yep. like that's pretty damning right there.
That's about
it. What is interesting is you know, Watergate is the obvious comparison, right? And with Watergate, it was the cover-up. It wasn't the crime that really did Nixon in, because the actual root crime of Watergate, like the facts that they established, probably on their own, if they had come out as it was happening, would not have been impeachable. It would have looked bad.
Right.
It would have been bad. But Nixon probably could have gotten away with another Checkers speech if he said, you know, oh, some people under me, they did this.
Explain the Checkers speech to the people, Virgil.
Yeah, so in the 1950s, Nixon was the vice president. In 1956, Eisenhower was running for re-election, and there was this pressure to dump Nixon from the ticket because Nixon had accepted basically bribes from a lobbyist. Say what?
Slush fund.
It was like a slush fund of California, like oligarchs, basically, right?
And that included, famously, a dog given to Nixon's daughter named Checkers. And Nixon went on television. He gave this speech saying, like, no, it wasn't a slush fund, blah, blah, blah. That was just a gift. And you know what? If you want me to send the money back, I'll send the money back. But I'm not sending back the dog because my little girl loves the dog. And that was the end of that.
Right. And I mean, I think that, you know, getting people to break into an office could be a bit of a problem. But you could distance yourself if you came out really quickly.
Yeah.
You fired the right people. You said, take this hit.
But the cover up, the competence, and the fact that it is directly being directed by that was being directed by Nixon, and that all of this all it came out at some point, which showed the depths of his Machiavellianism and his paranoia. That's what did him in, ultimately. With Trump, it's weird because everything happens immediately because these aren't complex schemes of his. These are things that he just says because he has an unregulated id.
I mean, I think this is a very important point because it's almost the opposite. Like, Trump almost learned that it was the cover-up that does you in. And so he goes on, yesterday, he goes on national television and announces that we did this.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think Trump understands is that in America now, it is the cover up, not the crime. And so if I come out and announce I did the crime, I'm okay.
Yeah, it puts everyone in a weird position. Like, wait, he just admitted to doing the crime. What do we do now?
Let's play
it's
this
the
clip
Lena
of this.
Dunham defense.
Let's
do we go get it?
Say about me that I haven't already said about myself.
No, what do you do? Do we go put handcuffs on him? He just said he did the crime. Well, everyone is confused now.
Right, exactly.
You're supposed to cover this stuff up. But the reason why he can't, though, is because he has absolutely no competent people around him who could possibly not even cover up the crime, but even like do the crime in
a
competent
fashion.
Well,
he won't allow them to cover it up because he's just convinced that like I can go out there and I can say, I mean, on some level, this is sort of like, you mentioned the spectacle. Some way, this is a little bit of like, the Sex Pistols where you build in the critique into the product on some level.
It's hyper real.
And here,
that's what persuaded you on those.
Let's
the built-in critique.
Well, here's Lee Zeldin, right? He comes out. This is a representative of Lee Zeldin from Long Island or wherever in New York. And he comes out in the middle of the inquiry. I guess it's about 3 or 4 o'clock. He comes out of the Volcker hearing, I think it is, and says, like, the whole story got completely destroyed. Now, of course, he's lying. But the whole story got completely destroyed today. The idea that Trump was looking for something from the Ukrainians about investigation. And watch what happens to him here. He's in the mode that you were talking about. Like, oh, we got to cover this up.
Yeah.
And he doesn't realize that the guy he's covering up for is not in that mode.
Yeah.
These committees of jurisdiction are blowing massive holes inside of the theory, the narrative that Chairman Schiff has been providing to the public. For example, when he says that President Trump was asking President Zelensky to manufacture dirt on the Bidens, today blows a hole in that argument. When you're making the claim that the president was asking for a quid pro quo, with President Zelensky, today is blowing a massive hole in the middle of that allegation.
The president asked the president of Ukraine to investigate Joe Biden today on camera. He also asked China to investigate Joe Biden today on camera.
Yeah.
How is that blowing a hole in that argument?
So with regards to, I don't want to get into all the answers to all the questions you asked with regards to the quid pro quo allegations that have been leveled. There is a lot of evidence of the fact that people knew on both sides, very clearly, on both the United States side and the Ukraine side, that there was no connection. There was no linkage between the two. And as a matter of fact, Ukraine didn't even know that the money was even being held up at the time. It was crystal clear, the guidance that was being provided on both sides, U.S. and Ukraine. The readouts from the July 25th call on both sides. But again, I hesitate to get into all the substance, the ins and outs, answering every detail of that before the interview finishes this evening.
The powerful advantage that Trump and Giuliani have is they absolutely have no discomfort in lying. I mean, this is like what happens when a relatively normal scumbag is just like,
he just realized, wait a second. Oh my God, the earth just moved underneath my feet. I've got to get out of here as soon as possible.
They're going to have to run a cover up where Trump contradicts their general talking. Like every day they go like, all right, we're on the same page. There's no quid pro quo. The president didn't say this. 30 minutes later, exactly. And I'd ask other people to do this too.
Well Volker was in there for 9 hours. So Zeleny comes out and he's going back in to finish the interview. And that's where I think the texts show up. And so he was lucky. He dodged the bullet.
The defense has to be that there wasn't a quid pro quo, that yes, he asked them to investigate Joe Biden. But that's a normal, you know, that's a normal thing for the president to do, to investigate corruption, ensure that our trade partners investigate corruption, obviously politically motivated. Would you say that let's put aside the notion that Trump held hostage aid or an arms sale in exchange for an investigation of Joe Biden? If all he said was China and Ukraine should investigate Joe Biden, would that itself be impeachable?
I think so. I mean, I think that the idea that the president is doing that particularly as a candidate against a political rival, I think that's highly problematic. There are it is not the president's job. There's no indication that the Justice Department has been working on this investigation on their own, and we're getting stonewalled and we need help. That's not the way this flowed.
Was it true?
It flowed the opposite way. And that's what I think is problematic.
In the early 90s, did George H.W. Bush's campaign ask the major government to release stuff about Bill Clinton dodging the draft, or do they do that on their own to curry favor with a sister party?
I don't know.
In itself,
that's kind of analogous.
It could be.
In itself, does that constitute collusion? Collusion's a word that's, the meaning of it has been obliterated over the past few years.
Yeah. I mean, collusion as defined in the Mueller report was specifically not, I do something that you know I like, that I know that you like, and you do something that you know I like, and we keep doing this back and forth. And even though we're getting cues from each other, if we don't articulate it, it's not collusion. Mm-hmm. In this instance, I'm sorry. This is like we have one of the players saying, as I said on the phone last night, I don't think we should be holding up aid for political domestic reasons.
Yeah.
And for some reason, the guy at the heart of it thought that's what they were doing.
So that can't be the case. For Trump's defense, that has to not be the case, because I think I think your line on that being collusion is ambiguous enough to most people to let Republicans off the hook, at least to not move the needle, is what I'm saying overall in what people believe and how they view the president. But if it, I think that's the line to be crossed right there into an explicit, you do this for me.
I don't think that the political salience of impeachment is what you're talking about. I think the value of impeachment, I mean, aside from like for all the people who think that what Trump is doing is corrupt, I think it's important to say our system is working at least enough to hold this guy accountable, right? Like you know, as skeptical as we all are of the media as an institution and of a whole range of things, you're going to be concerned about this whistleblower, but you don't care about Edward Snowden.
Yeah.
You know, like all of this, definitely problematic and room for cynicism. But at the very least, to ignore this would be that much more deeply problematic. But in terms of its political efficacy, I think the only the real value is you don't even have to necessarily sell people on the idea that he should be impeached, because I think he's going to be impeached. I think that's basically a fait accompli. The value is in that race in Iowa, in that race, that congressional race in Arizona, in that congressional race in Colorado, in that senatorial race in Maine, you're going to be able to, if you're a Democrat running against a Republican, you're going to be able to say, you voted to protect Donald Trump. End of story. You're on Trump's team. And now if somebody votes for you, they're voting for Trump.
I agree with that. I'm wondering, but how far does that go? Because doesn't that at some point reach, doesn't that meet a hardcore of Trump support?
Of course.
That's not going to be moved.
Of course.
I'd say we can say, you know, this will move the needle in Maine. But will it move the needle in or make a state like Kansas competitive?
No.
Will it make a state like Kentucky competitive?
No. It could in Texas.
Because, I mean, that's I really think, like, after that transcript was released last night, it hinges on two questions. I think the importance of this, you know, just get beyond the whole thing of, you know, defending the Constitution and our institutions or whatever. There are two critical questions. One, could there be an actual breaking point where enough Republicans in the Senate would remove him?
No.
No.
I do. No, there is
but
a breaking
two,
point.
But two, and it's tied to the first question. Trump has, you know, his approval ratings have been in a very narrow band his entire presidency. Could this actually break his approval ratings? Could he actually dip
drop
beneath where, you know, he has had a hard floor of like 35%?
I think that it's conceivable he could drop a point or two in his, but I think this was the same thing during the Bush years. There's 35% of the population that's it. They're not moving. They're intractable. And the only line where you'll have any Republican senators vote for impeachment is the day that Trump is caught on video naked running around the front of the White House chasing that little boy who was, you know, in the meme mowing the lawn. That's it.
I think that's still wrong.
And
it's exactly that. I was exposing corruption.
But I think that all the data from 2018 shows that it's not a question of persuading Trump voters. It is a question of getting people who are on the sidelines out to vote against Trump. And this makes it that much easier to get people who aren't necessarily compelled to vote against a congressperson to vote against Trump by voting against that congressperson or to vote against Trump about voting against that Republican senator, because there is no greater way to tie yourself to a president than voting to not impeach them. I think. I mean, look, this is what.
But the story has to matter for that to matter, or else it gets dismissed as partisan politics. But was that the case in 2018? Are you saying that this is substantively worse than what had come out by Election Day 2018, where the Democrats did take back the House, but they lost ground in the Senate? They lost swing state. They lost the Florida Senate race, for instance.
Well, I do think that it is. I think it makes a difference, but I think it's basically just the way the Democrats are reacting. I buy into this concept of basically the reaction shot. I do, as a director, I'm shooting an action that someone does, and the audience, I tell the audience how to react to it.
With laugh tracks.
By laugh track or by showing a reaction shot from someone that that the audience relates to.
Like a horn honking noise, you throw a Foley pie.
Work.
You know, that's basic comedy. I understand. You don't
Foley work, but it's the reaction that tells the audience how they should interpret this. And when the Democrats come up and actually impeach, I think it basically says to people who don't pay that much of attention, like, this is worthy of impeachment. And it's not, you know, the underlying thing is he leveraged aid to a foreign country to get dirt on a political rival. And you know, it's not like these cast of characters either, you know, are like distinct. It's not like they're going to bring Giuliani up there and people are going to be like, that's like Ollie North.
Well, there's also, you know, Matt pointed this out the other day, you know, it's the thing itself, the underlying thing is actually something that would really piss Republicans off, who are content to see Trump, you know, he can do whatever he wants. He can put children in camps. He can, you know, be a buffoon on the world stage. That doesn't matter unless he doesn't screw with interest rates. He doesn't mess with the Fed, and he doesn't mess with arms sales to Ukraine or Saudi Arabia or Israel. Once he starts screwing with stuff like that, it's okay. No, the adults have to step in.
The real question is, if this is what he did with Ukraine, what else has he done with what? There's other readouts from other phone calls in this most protected, secure server in the
U.S.
Has he
not figured out that everything he says on the phone is like that going to be released?
I think
that's
why he still gives out his private number. Like, everybody reported it as, like, him being an idiot, which he is, but that's probably also his, like...
I just give out my burner
phone.
Hit me
on my direct line.
Call me in my burner. Call my burner. But I also think that, like, I'll tell you what would really do him in, is if, with those people, is if he finds out that this war with China, this trade war with China, was because they wouldn't give information on Hunter Biden.
That's the other thing
And I'm not 100% sure, because it was reported today that he had a conversation with Xi about Biden.
I will say, so. I think we largely agree on this, and I'm not trying to be relativistic, but the fact that at the core of this is Joe Biden's scummy son with a job that he obviously didn't earn, that's, you know, that holds the story back a little bit. And I worry that your average person who's not really, you know, man on the street, is not really paying attention that closely, could be persuaded by an argument that, well, you know, wait, he was making how much working for a gas firm? Mm-hmm. You know, while his dad was vice president, that does seem like something to be investigated.
I mean, I think there's some truth to that. And I think if
I'm not saying they're, and I'm not saying they're comparable at all.
No, they're not comparable. They aren't comparable at all. But it is
ridiculous when I hear you know, Democrats pushing the impeachment hard, or people in the media say, and by the way, at the root of the story is 100% false. There's nothing there about Joe Biden.
But this is the same thing that happened with Hillary Clinton. This precisely, there is a conspiracy which is false, which is this prosecutor getting fired. That is false and actually contradicts all of the evidence, and that's a whole other conversation about how we use corruption and so on, which I think is important in a car wash world to talk about. But regardless, the one thing that is true and probably even legal is that this kid got an astronomical payday to sit on an energy board. Everybody thinks that's disgusting, and this is exactly what Trump can do. He mashes up truth and fiction in a way that's effective.
Well, I think without a doubt, if Joe Biden cared about beating Donald Trump, he would step out of the race right now.
He would realize
that, like, you know, that this is too much of a liability to enter into the general election. But I don't know that.
And there's a lot more with Hunter. I mean, look, there's Biden's whole career. But then even if you want to just do the threat of his son, I believe he started lobbying for MBNA right around the time that Biden was pushing through the bankruptcy bill. I think he even was on the Amtrak board.
Yeah,
but Biden would never think that, because for guys at that level, that's just business as usual.
Well,
that's normal.
That's
for the same reason that Hillary Clinton didn't decide not to run after giving those Wall Street speeches,
right,
or after using the Clinton fund as a global slush fund.
Well, Trump has actually been quite adept at taking what we consider to be run-of-the-mill corruption that is almost like just the way things are done, and making it as if he is indignant about it. Like, I mean, that's what he used to say. Like, I know these politicians are corrupt because I was the one corrupting them.
Yeah.
And he runs on liberal hypocrisy, right? Yeah. And it doesn't matter to the people who like him that Trump is a total hypocrite too, for whatever reason, because he doesn't have the affect, like he's all high and mighty, while they do.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we've talked about the impeachment.
Liberal hypocrisy.
Let's talk about the election.
Oh,
now.
There's an election happening.
There's an election happening.
Well, Justin Trudeau, his approval ratings have not been hurt that terribly right now.
From the blackface.
From the constant blackface, the fact that he was in full body black paint from 1989 to 2007. right now it's the liberals and conservatives are neck and neck there, but probably the most likely outcome is a minority government for either, but it depends who could put together a coalition. Not that I've seen.
Okay, so Singh
still in the NDP, still in the mid-teens, which is far away from where the two main parties are. The interesting factor is the Green Party, which is a Green Party. It's what the Green Party. It's not like our Green Party, which is a different kind of cranks. Which is at about 10%, much higher than they usually are. Everyone expects that number to go down when people in the final week when people, you know, realize, oh, I've got to vote for one of the three
Greens
main parties.
Greens will not commit to not coalitioning with the Conservatives. So all right, just remember that, Canadians.
We're opening up the phone lines to Canadians only right now.
You know there's a contingent of this audience
which is
slobbering over
so
this
excited.
Right now.
All right.
And that's it.
There, we had two Canadians on our show this week. It was an honor.
Really?
Yes.
Who?
Luke Savage Donald Get Fiscal Hughes.
I don't know that dude.
He's very funny.
Looks good.
All right. Well, let's go a little bit south, not all the way down to Mexico, but into the United States, and talk about what we have going on in the primary. All the numbers have been released.
Yeah, Warren today. I was wondering for a while why Warren didn't release her number, and I thought it's either bad, not like terrible bad, but middling, or it's really good, and she wants the day to herself.
Yeah.
And it turned out it was interesting. It was right a hair beneath Bernie. Good numbers, like for anyone, but still worse numbers than Bernie. And Bernie came right out the gate with his numbers, which was a gamble on his team's part because presumably they did not know for sure what Warren's numbers were. And if Warren said, "Oh, that's cute, 25 million. I got 40 million," they would have looked like assholes.
Yep.
But instead, this is probably just a good outcome. What's ironic here is Warren's average donation, $26, $27 was famously the Bernie average donation. This time around, Bernie's average is $18.
And he has, I think, about 1.3 million donors.
He has 1 million donors. 1.3 million was the number of donations
that
quarter.
Okay.
Because usually people will chip in 10, 20 bucks every time they see something that pisses them off on the internet.
So 1 million donors and about 99% of them have not maxed out. So that means that there's a lot of growth there. I haven't seen the comparable set of numbers for Warren. I think she had something like now has close to 700,000 donors and coming in with 24 point something million, and Bernie had 25
Formidable.
Point. Yes.
I'm curious what the overlap is as well.
That would be interesting.
I'm not sure if there's any way to collate that. Actually, there might be, because all of that all public data.
I'm sure it is all public data. In fact, I think they track those. I know
The problem is some of the data is corrupted, you know, because people just like they enter in their information in weird ways.
Right.
And as well, I don't think, for instance, if I donate to Bernie, if I'm assigned an FEC tracking number, so all of my donations have that tracking number, I guess is what I'm saying. So you would have to look up my name. So there's going to be, you know, thousands of John Smiths donating. So.
I would like to know who these people are who maxed out on their Bernie donations. I feel like it's literally just the members of Vampire Weekend and maybe some of you guys at Chapo.
One of my colleagues did. Yeah. I won't tell you who, but one of my colleagues did.
Nice.
Also Ben
You want
Cohen.
To maintain your
It was not me. It was not me. I'll tell you that. You'll have to do some shoe leather reporting if you want to get to the bottom of who. I know two people who I think maxed out.
Early.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
good job,
so,
class traders.
And we should say Biden
tanked.
Biden did 15 million, and
which is fine if you're not Joe Biden.
Right. I mean, if you're Pete Buttigieg,
yeah,
it's
what
really
we make
great.
What did we make him? Buttigieg is 19. That's pretty good.
That was still lower than his last quarter.
Yeah.
He's in it.
I mean, I think he has
resilient,
been doing
though.
The donors, and I don't know. I mean, I think he's a guy who's going to – I don't know what he does.
Is it an investment in the future? You run an incredible race. You go to – you get a talk show on MSNBC or something. Then you run national
in a
different
vice
state.
You could run as vice president.
If he doesn't get picked as vice president, my guess would be he has to run national in a different state. Because that's like why we're even doing this whole exercise.
National in a different state?
Well, I'm saying he can't run for Senate or even Congress in Indiana, presumably.
Probably not.
Maybe
if we're a different guy.
I mean, there's a reason why the mayor of, like, what is it, the third or fourth largest city in the state is running for president. It's kind of whole exercise kind of ridiculous. But he couldn't, I don't think he would have had a viable Senate run. And if he did, he would have lost, and then he would be done.
Yeah, I have no idea what his future plans are. But so, all right, let me ask you this, because yesterday I had on Eric Levitz to talk about his piece. I don't know if you read that in the...
I did not.
And the argument that he makes is that, at least in the context of domestic politics, because I think he concedes that Bernie has a better foreign policy, and in the context of where American politics will probably be for the next president, assuming it's either Bernie or Warren, that makes a difference. And that is, I think he says, you know, that is a valid sort of a place to differentiate between the two candidates. But his argument is, and I summed it up, I gave him this analogy and he accepted it as a basically broad statement on his piece, was that Bernie may be going 70 miles, may be a vehicle that can go 70 miles an hour, and Warren is one that can go, let's say, 60 miles an hour, and Biden is one that can go 30 miles an hour, but it's a 50 mile an hour speed limit. The constraints of American politics are going to be such on any president that their ability, despite the fact that Bernie's plans may be more ambitious and more universal, that their ability to implement these are going to be constrained on either one of them. What do you make of that argument, and that the distinctions that people are trying to make between Warren and Bernie are therefore, at least in domestic politics, a little bit overblown?
If the constraints are the problem, then remove the constraints. The fact that we have these reactionary institutions that would presumably prevent even the most modest redistribution of wealth or modest threats to private profit or private property in this country, that's just a reason to give up. And that shows how much we suffer from a lack of imagination that there can be any economic system that is at all different from the one that we have.
Well,
and in practical terms, that can mean things like statehood for DC. That can mean things like packing the Supreme Court, which things you could do with a bare majority. That also means realigning things. That means going to places like West Virginia or Kansas that used to be, well, in West Virginia's case, used to be reliable Democratic votes. And that means realigning the Democratic Party itself so that it is not the party that just represents coastal and college town intellectuals.
Well, also, think about their ability to deal with these constraints. They are not the same. They don't have the same strategy. They don't have the same approach. I think Elizabeth Warren's approach is more one of technocracy and plans, and Bernie's approach is one of building a movement that lasts past the election, which is something I think he understands better than anyone else running by far. It's something Obama didn't really understand. Like, read some of Megan Day's pieces in Jacobin, I think, on like exactly the kind of labor movement and the kind of grassroots power that would be necessary for Bernie to pass anything that he's trying to do that just doesn't exist with anyone else.
Right. And but and Levitz addressed this by saying that theory, the idea that under Sanders, you will realign the Democratic Party in such a way that will cross the sort of the partisan lines that we have now on some level. It has been not borne out by results in 2018, that the issue sets and whatnot have not gone there. His argument is that he starts it with is that the left at this point is not as strong as it would appear.
All superstructure, no base.
Yes, all superstructure, no base.
In 2018, it was still Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer's party. It's still the party of big D.C. donors. Like, the party hadn't changed just because lefties won a handful of primaries.
Right. And I think his argument is that the party won't be materially different in 2020 either.
I think if Bernie Sanders were the nominee, it would be the beginning of that process. And I'm not sure how rapid that process could take. But something that heartens me is seeing these videos of billionaires, like the billionaire founder of Home Depot, I forget his name.
Yes, Ken Langone.
Ken Langone's name.
Yeah, yeah.
And
going on TV and saying, you know, Bernie Sanders against me. I think we should get rid of Bernie Sanders.
Right.
That's the Blackstone guy.
That's the Blackstone guy.
Those
okay.
Are two different comments.
They both said that actually.
Oh, Langone said get rid of it too. Wow.
Yeah.
They keep coming out against the guy, and it's very obvious that his message, which is specifically labor oriented, is a threat to them. I had the opportunity last week to interview Bernie Sanders. And I don't know if you had a chance to watch that interview.
No, I heard it just got released.
Yeah, it just got dropped this morning. And, you know, we had a far-reaching discussion. He had seen The Joker already. All the senators get a screener for it. And, yeah, he's pro. He wants all his supporters to watch it and take their inspiration from that film. He will look. He will reverse the Juul ban.
Hell yeah.
And, yeah, he's going to make... No, sorry, I had a third thing. Forget it.
Well, okay,
Anyway, I'm sorry. So, essentially, what I asked was along these lines, but with the context of you say, you know, you want to be the organizer in chief.
Right.
You know, what does this actually mean? Like, what does bottom up political change look like? What does labor militancy look like? How does that actually affect change? How does that relate to the institutions that a president or a member of Congress must navigate? And how does you and your campaign intersect with that? And in the days leading up to that interview, he had been in Chicago, where the Chicago Teachers Union voted. They had a rally. John Cusack was there for some reason. And they voted by like 99% to approve a strike.
Right.
And he gave this, you know, this firebrand speech there where he called out Lori Lightfoot, the Democrat mayor of Chicago, by name. And he told them that you are fighting a class war. Then he flew to Michigan. And he spoke at a UAW picket. They're entering now the third week of their strike against GM. And he told them much the same thing. The labor movement, what remains of the labor movement, loves Bernie because they share his conception of power and change.
Right.
And when he talks about labor militancy, that means a labor movement that is not just trying to defend what they have. That's not on the back foot
it's
as they've been for decades.
Unionism. They're trying to you know, they're expanding, I think,
and it goes beyond just what they're getting.
Right.
But
social
it is,
justice
it is,
unionism.
Yes.
Right. That the teachers, the Chicago teachers strike was sort of the modern paradigm shifter for that. The first one 8 years ago.
Right. Followed by the G3 strikes in the rest of the country.
But the point remains. I mean, I think all that's true, and I think that Levitz would concede that. But I think the question is where are we on that point? Like, will we know if the left has that strength? If this strategy is working? I mean, it seems to me that we'll know if he wins Iowa, despite the fact that the polling shows that he won't. Now we'll know that. I mean, if he can't win those early states, is that indicative of the fact that the left is still not where it needs to be for that attempt to be a factor in creating legislation and policies and these changes in the year 2021 and 2022, 2023?
To answer your question, we know the left isn't where it needs to be because, by and large, the anti-capitalist left is still mostly intellectuals, college students, and the like. And the idea is that, like, that very small strata...
Downwardly mobile millennials from the middle class.
Right, and many of whom do actually have serious material concerns. That
we're not the working class. We're just a small slice of the working class, and we need to be the entire working class in order to win.
I'm more of the leisure class, but I see what you're saying. The idea is that this small strata links up and radicalizes the much bigger working class base. And that hasn't happened yet, but it's not a process that, you know, lightning strikes and like everything blows up. But I think there are times when nothing happens, and I think there's times when a lot of things happen. And as well, what the Bernie Sanders campaign is, that is the vehicle to do that, to bring that project into fruition, is to radicalize people, because he is a weird man. He is a weird old man who talks in a thick Brooklyn accent.
Great dynamic case here, Virgil.
From Vermont. But people listen to him.
That's
people
right.
perceive him as being on their side, because his entire life he has spoken about people's material concerns. He doesn't get wrapped up in, you know, the flavor of the day.
I agree with everything you're saying. I think there's a couple of different things that I've gleaned from looking over the Levitt piece. So one is, I think that some of it is that the left is weak. And that's true. I don't think any, even including the people he's critiquing in Jacobin, deny that. Everybody accepts that the left needs to be. Then is the theory of change compelling? Then how big an actual material difference is there in terms of what kind of policy set can get implemented, right? Like, these are kind of the different lanes he's dealing with.
Right.
And I think that, I mean, and I won't replicate what Virgil said. I'm still compelled by the movement argument and the distinct value proposition of what Sanders is doing, just even in the sense that I think that what he's doing is generating, you know, you will talk to people who say, oh, in 2016, I volunteered for his campaign. Now I'm a labor organizer. You know, you still get that unparalleled kind of outgrowth of that.
Oh,
but
yeah,
then I
talk to people
think,
in DSA all the time who came in through that.
Yeah, exactly. I think, though, that there's another kind of interesting tension in the piece. And honestly, maybe I should reread it, but I'm a little confused on. Because on one hand, he's I think that it's fine to note that Warren is kind of playing a dual strategy where she's running a center-left reform campaign and then also reaching out to Hillary Clinton. And I think that that's just true, right? Like, it doesn't need to be like, see, she's a secret sellout, we hate her. But I think it's also, yeah, there's a different approach here, and that's fine.
Well, he addresses that.
And he addresses it, but I think it's interesting.
Bernie's doing the same thing.
Well, right, and
I
think hinging
strategy.
Your argument on that is a mistake, because of course they're doing the same thing in terms of reaching out to superdelegates and so on. Although I think maybe the soliciting of Clinton's opinion is a bit different than having a superdelegate strategy. But he goes on to say that, and this is actually where I'm not sure I would read this the same way, because he says that maybe that in light of these facts, it's not conceivable that a president more closely aligned with the Democratic Party and less openly hostile to its key power centers would actually be able to get senators like John Tester and Kyrsten Sinema to swallow marginally more progressive legislation in 2021 than a president with an independent public political identity who projected contempt for their wing of the party. And, you know, I see what he's saying, but I actually think that that actually loops back to the advantage that Bernie has in a general election with his independent brand. Because when you look at people like Tester and Sinema, they're infinitely to the right of Bernie, but they also get a lot of mileage themselves out of projecting contempt on Democratic power centers. Mm-hmm. And I think that that might actually end up working, like you say all the time, Sam, in terms of people's less policy and more dispositional focus.
I mean, that's
a looping advantage, in my opinion.
Levitz is not really making an argument about electability in the general election, and I think
Well, he was making about getting legislation passed.
He's talking about legislation.
Yeah, and I actually think that that could work. I think a guy that could go to a place like Montana more plausibly and say, hey, John, you and I both kind of, you know, roll our eyes at Chuck Schumer, or however the hell you put it, work with me to push this anti-DC agenda, is a much more compelling way of pressuring somebody like John Tester than John Tester going like, hey, you know, Montana folks, I'm not voting for this big ag breakup bill because he's insufficiently deferential to national Democrats that you hate.
Well, I don't think it's I don't think that was what Levitz. I mean, I think Levitz would concede that it could go either way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's the thing he's arguing, is that it is, you can make a rational argument on either way, that someone who plays an inside game has the ability and doesn't come with the baggage of being anti-capitalist in a redder state, that may, you know, or with corporate Democrats even, may have an easier time. But I think he would also concede it's also possible that Bernie may speak to people there and create more pressure for like a Joe Manchin, let's say. I think that's basically.
Well, even like when he says centrist Democrats, this is what some part of our job that's just legitimately hard, right? Because like, you know, Chris Coons, yes, probably more likely that he can sit down and have a drink with Elizabeth Warren and be persuaded on some derivative regulation if it doesn't contradict his donor base too much. But I think a centrist Democrat that represents a place like West Virginia or Montana, it's almost entirely predicated on somebody being able to go to a state like that with credibility and say, I'm against the establishment. Time to, you know, put your money where your mouth is, basically.
Like, here's the thing about red states, and they talk about this a lot on Trillbilly Workers Party, which is one of my favorite podcasts right now. They're in Kentucky. Red states like Kentucky, the conventional wisdom is, you need to run a moderate because it's a mixture of Democrats and Republicans. But like, no, red states have some of the highest rates of poverty and the lowest rates of voting. And those two things are connected. So if you have somebody who's speaking to people's material interests, who's standing up against the Democratic Party establishment, which has screwed them over and over again when they've been in power, that's going to make more of a case to people who've dropped out and who are disenfranchised. I don't know if it's going to work or not. There are a lot of factors working against it.
I am somewhat moved by the idea that you're going to do better if you offer material benefit to people. But I mean, Elizabeth Warren is, you know, there's a difference between her policy set and Bernie Sanders, but it is
and
far to the left and naming enemies. I mean, she
talks about Wall Street in a very enemy fashion.
I mean,
talk about Wall Street from different dialects.
Definitely. I think that's true. I just don't think there are people in Kentucky who are saying, we vote for Republicans because when Democrats are in power, they are screwing us over.
No. People don't vote because Democrats are screwing them over, and they don't think either party is going to do anything for them, and they're usually right.
Do you think, though, and this
it's about turnout, not persuasion.
I think Kentucky, it's not going to happen.
Do you think, though, and this is a decades-long argument, do you think, though, if Democrats have been delivering over the past three decades— that it at the very least would present a real conflict for somebody if, as an example, their social inclinations contradicted their economic ones. If they could say, there is one national party that I disagree with because on immigration or whatever, but they actually really are delivering for me in terms of killing something like NAFTA, I think we would have a very different national politics if that was the case over the last several decades.
I think even more to the point, if the Democrats had done more to support unions, they'd have an apparatus that
there
would get people out. And sure. I don't know that the individual voter would be making some type of calculation like that. Yeah, of course.
That's the thing.
But that's what we need to regenerate.
Yeah. I guess the point is it gets back to the point of like when I look at Warren's, I think that if there's a 20% chance or a 10% chance that Bernie's going to be able to actually do that realignment, then it's worth it in my mind. But the distinction between Warren's labor plan, which calls for not all but many of the same things that Bernie does, I think both of them are going to receive a similar reception in the context of being able to legislate for it. Now, I think that
if I could jump in here.
Yes.
I don't need to know the details. I don't care about the plans. And non-voters don't need to know the details, and they don't care either. You vote for a representative because you want someone to figure out the details. Someone else has to figure that out. You're not getting screwed because someone in the bureaucracy didn't carry the two. That's not the problem here. They and I want to know, are you on my side? Do you represent my interests? And if you erase class distinctions, as we've done in the past 40 years, pretend that they don't exist, then everyone's going to have a really muddled idea of what that means, being on my side. And chances are you're just going to resort to cultural signifiers. I think that the Bernie campaign is the only one that has a chance of breaking through that. It's a process that I think would be slow, but I think that it's already, from his first campaign through today, already bearing fruit. I think it's already generating that kind of change. It's certainly realigned the way Democrats talk about things. So that guys like Pete Buttigieg pander to voters, for instance. And ultimately, I think that if the Elizabeth Warren campaign radicalizes you, they radicalize you to vote for Elizabeth Warren. If the Bernie Sanders campaign radicalizes you, it's to join a labor union or make your labor union more militant.
Absolutely.
Yeah, or get involved in your local DSA chapter. Like, I know people in DSA who are, I would say, on the left pole of DSA right now. They've gone to political ed. They're like, oh yeah, Bernie's not even a socialist. I know now that he's a social democrat and I'm a communist. They came in because of Bernie Sanders in 2016. And that's an amazing fact to me.
I think, like, right now there's obviously, I mean, there's one tendency, which is ridiculous on some of the sort of Warren adjacent, to really try to erase the vital differences. And then I think there's a countervailing tendency in some of the sort of, not certainly not in his campaign, but in the Sanders world, to sort of exaggerate, you know, Warren's negatives. And these things are kind of obvious. They're expected during a campaign. But neither of those moves are necessary to really clearly delineate some very large differences here. And I think the approach does matter a lot, because there's long-term implications to it as well. I actually think Obama's even more problematic, because Obama did build a movement. We say it all the time. He built a movement that was literally personality centric and then dissembled it. And, you know, that's neither Warren nor what Sanders is doing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that is just building up this beautiful car and then saying, like, oh, I'm on the inside now. I don't want it to compete with me.
I mean, literally. And,
yes.
We just built the world's fastest. It's an electric Lamborghini.
All right, let's put it away. Well, that's good. I advertised yesterday that we would have a mirror image conversation of the one we had yesterday with Eric Levitz. I think pretty much. I think the argument is that really, in my mind, that you can lose better one way than another way, and that. That losing these legislative fights with Bernie Sanders, as opposed to losing them with Elizabeth Warren, is actually beneficial long-term politics in this country, because how you lose, I mean, it's on some level, it's similar to my impeachment argument. They're not going to get him out of office.
Yeah.
They are, what the Democrats are doing is they're signifying we're going to hold him to account. And to the extent that we can hold him to account, it's stopped by Republicans here. And it has implications for politics, not because you're not going to be facing Donald Trump, but you're going to be able to do a lot more structural difference in terms of Republicans across the board. And I think there's a similar dynamic with Bernie Sanders going out there having the same exact fight that Elizabeth Warren is having, that the way that they fight and lose will be different and will have more value, broadly speaking, to progressive politics in the future.
I only, had the chance to talk to Bernie for about 20 minutes. They let me go a little long, and I wish
they usually give me about 21.
That's
not a big deal.
Well, they did let me go long, so ultimately I got about 30.
Well, that's fine. I mean, I do my pre-interview too.
Right, you had the exclusive for High Donor Lounge. With
the High Donor Lounge, exactly.
Bernie was like, VIP. Oh, you're going to have Levitz on to concern troll? Screw you, Sam. 7 minutes.
But I wish I had more time, because I would love to hear Bernie articulate this point further. And my producer, Chris... we were talking about the interview afterwards, and he said, the one thing that I want answered is, okay, let's say it's February 2021, and, you have the Medicare for All bill, ban private health insurance, the nationalized health insurance on the floor, and, it's not getting out of committee. You have a movement, you have an email list of tens of millions at this point. What's your first email?
Right.
What does that say? Senator, tell me where to throw a brick.
Right. Interesting. What, did you ask him about the, because we talked about structural reform in terms of like those, did you ask him about the filibuster?
No detail stuff.
No. And court packing. I mean, he is at least projecting sort of a an institutionalist perspective on these things. I mean, you know, there's some argument as to whether reconciliation. I mean, these are important things in terms of like legislative strategy, right? I mean,
it an interesting dialectic, though? I mean, like if you I'm thinking back to the conversation with Shahid Buttar, who, by the way, I should have pulled it up. He had an amazing fundraising cycle, fundraising quarter in his challenge for Pelosi.
Oh, good.
And his sort of articulation of being a fusion of a democratic socialist with like very strong constitutional commitment to constitutional protections. I at the very least think it's interesting that Bernie's projecting that like on one hand, I'm going to be the organizer in chief. I'm going to have a completely unparalleled relationship to trying to essentially mobilize millions of people to be engaged in forcing Congress's hand. We'll see. We don't know whether that will succeed or not. I think that's the only remote path in terms of anything that could possibly work. And then on the other hand, I'm actually going to sort of mash that up with some institutional respect, which I think presumably he must be speaking from the perspective of somebody who sees that he was able to thwart some damage at the margins using this type of thing. That could be like my only guess, but I think it's an interesting argument.
I will say this. You remember the ACA fight in 2017.
In 2017.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. The repeal fight. Yeah.
Yes.
And the scenes of disability activists holding die-ins at the U.S. Capitol.
Huge.
And being arrested, you know, hold out of committee meetings and things like that. I think that for Sanders to push his agenda, I think it would look a lot like that, where that activist fight is not, it's not on the back foot. It's not in the way that union movements have been, fortress unionism. I think it would not be fortress activism, where this only comes out when what little we have is now under fire.
And we should say, I mean, and not coincidentally, Bernie was immediately crisscrossing the country, holding rallies to protect the ACA at that time, 2017.
Yeah, he actually did it. That was a great example of him doing that work.
All right, well, let's now go and take a look at some clips, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Would you like to do that with us? We'll watch some funny moments in our news.
Love some viral
so
videos.
Crazy. Oh, you know what we're going to do? We're going to do a Freebie Friday today, folks. Because we don't have time to do the... I just laughed as soon as you put that up there. We don't have time to take a break, so we're going to do a Freebie Friday. Just want to remind you of a couple of things. One, the AM Quickie. Today is the last day you could get it on the Majority Report feed. So you need to go to amquickie.com and sign up to get it on Stitcher or iTunes or wherever. We're going to try and see if we can get it on Spotify. We're going to have it on Alexa soon and all these other places. But go right now, either in your iTunes, in your podcast app or wherever. AM Quickie. It's just less than 5 minutes every day. Just gives you the headlines, but it's not, you know, it's not NPR. It's not 1010 Wins. It's giving you the headlines that we think if you like the stories that we cover on this program, I think you're going to like at least, you know, gives you a little footing as you walk out the door. So check that out. Also, remember, this show relies on your support. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com and justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Quickly, do plugs, and then we will get to this stuff. Michael.
November 23rd, Philadelphia, live show with Crystal Ball, Emma Viglin, and Artesia Balthrop. Special guests. We're very excited. World Cafe. Snag your tickets. We'll see you there. On this weekend, an illicit history of counter-hegemonic foreign policy, the non-aligned movement from Barbados to Norway with Daniel Bessner, patreon.com/TMBS, Michael Brooks Show on YouTube.
Jamie.
This week on the Antifada, we speak with Nadia Guyot, an organizer from No New Jails NYC, about No New Jails campaign to defeat de Blasio's dystopian plan to close Rikers Island and replace it with all of these combined shopping center prison justice hubs around the boroughs, which is pretty gross. Also, out today for our patrons, there is a new episode of Vampire Castle featuring Leslie Lee III, my collaborator on that project. In this one, we talk about the iconic 1994 film The Crow, starring Brandon Lee, as well as some the slightly less iconic, R.I.P. Brandon Lee, and the slightly less iconic sequel, The Crow, City of Angels. And you might say, oh, Jamie, but that's not a vampire movie. Are you sure? Are you sure? Watch it again. Listen to the episode. It's not a vampire movie. Also, our live show is coming up in, oh my God, it's a week from tomorrow at the fucking Littlefield. It's going to be so good. I'm so tired from stressing out about my show.
Fucking Littlefield.
Littlefield NYC. And, we're going to have some great guests. For example, this guy right here.
Virgil,
our favorite
Texas.
Boy.
Yep.
Our large adult son, Virgil Texas.
It's going to be a big show.
And Matt Chrisman as well. There's probably going to be some yelling happening, mostly from Matt to Virgil, but maybe in reverse as well.
Links in the
mini debates.
Links in the podcast description and on the front page. Matt.
Literary Hangover. I did Lydia Maria Child's first novel, Hobomach. Coming up later this month, I'll just say Witches.
Yeah. And I just checked out the FUBAR, America's Right Wing Nightmare page, and apparently there is no paperback.
Oh, you got to get that rating up.
You can get the book now for $1.49, but that's used.
Well, that's coming soon. And, look at that date right there.
It's coming eventually.
Look at the date.
2075. They're going to wait until I'm dead.
Man, what kind of?
They say they want to pay me.
What kind of metrics does the publishing
use? But look, scroll down, put it back on hardcover, and scroll down and look at what customers who bought this item also bought. Wait, no, scroll back up. Look at that. Ben Burgess's book, but then also The Chapo Guide to Revolution. And then State and Revolution.
I'm pretty impressed by the Lenin snack.
And
right there.
In some good company there.
And then Manufacturing Consent.
Wow.
Yeah, everybody should grab that. And of course, give them an argument. And help.
That was my way of
views.
Saying Chapo Guide to Revolution is now out in paperback. There it is. Yeah. So check that out, folks. You can find that you could probably get both books for whatever the Chapo book cost, plus like $1.49. So if you want to go down that route.
Some good used copies on there.
Yeah, that's used, very good. Barely opened.
There's light rubbing on the cover on that one.
Barely opened on that one. Light rubbing. Okay. All right, let's
light
gently used.
Wow.
Those are all mine, incidentally, that I'm trying to sell. All right, let's go to this. This is exciting. Let's just get this out of the way, shall we? Yeah. Folks, as you know, Steven Crowder, we did we dropped the Crowder files the other day. And we, again, encourage you to take a picture of your socks and help Steven Crowder, who got cold feet, and just send it to him as an inspiration for him to get some, maybe to warm his feet up and come and talk to us. I just want to say, I want to thank all of you who have participated in this, and I don't want to single out anybody who has been, getting on Steven Crowder to debate me. But this guy, obviously, I've been a huge fan of his work in the film world, and so I was really appreciated him weighing in. Folks, I give you Kevin Sorbo.
Well, Steven. You got cold feet, I understand. Cold feet, and you won't debate Sam. Why will you not debate Sam? But just to let you know, Sam is still up for it. All right? So just call Sam, and you'll set something up. But if Steven's dad won't let him debate you for some reason... Sam understands. He says he gets it. All right.
You should rewind that.
I hope I've done my job. And I'd be remiss if I didn't promote my latest movie streaming on Amazon.
Wait, can we rewind to the part where he's where this part about the dad? That's incredible.
Yeah, that was
that's some very fine very writing right in the middle.
Now, we got to say hat tip to listener Ryan, who I think paid for this. I don't know how much he paid for it. It could have been like $90. Hey, we could get that guy a T-shirt.
It was at Ryan Rec, REC66.
Yeah,
there I was
that,
thinking
Ryan.
Kevin Sorbo was a fan of ours.
No, sorry. It turns out that Kevin Sorbo
Am I doing something wrong with the...
Are you not plugged in there?
I plugged in with my headphones.
Oh, you got to plug that into the cord.
Oh,
where
does this go?
There you go. Sorry.
Well,
great,
Steven.
Were you going to play
you got
again?
Cold feet, I understand.
In the middle, or whatever.
Cold feet, and you won't debate Sam. Why will you not debate Sam? But just to let you know, Sam is still up for it. All right.
I'm so sad about this.
Just call Sam, and you'll set something up. But. If Steven's dad won't let him debate you for some reason, Sam understands.
It's true. I do understand.
Listen, that's the status.
My folks have not weighed in on this, I want to say. But it's possible they would also be like, don't debate Steven. You know, don't. It'll be, you know, there's no reason to make him feel bad. And so we'll see. But Steven, I just want you to know that you don't have to do this just because Kevin Sorbo says to do it. Do it so that people who watch your show don't think that you're just looking for college students to debate with. Do it for yourself, Steven. Forget Kevin Sorbo. Forget Dad. Just do it for you. That's all I'm saying.
He said, forget Dad.
Easier said than done.
Virgil, you mentioned the Canadian elections that are imminent. Here is a – and you know what? Like this is like the third clip I've seen of Canadians having some type of like racist run-in with Sikh candidates – lawmakers in Canada over the past like 3 or 4 months. Now, to be fair, I don't know how many Sikh candidates we have in this country, and I don't know that they would be like polite enough, racists to come up and actually get it just on camera like this. But this is, this exchange speaks for itself. This is NDP leader Jamit Singh, who's And a guy, I guess, in Montreal, Quebec.
Bonjour, monsieur.
Hello.
How are you? Good to see you. So are you okay?
Yes, you too.
Pleasure to meet you.
You know what?
What's that?
You should cut your turban off and you put a little, you look like a Canadian.
Oh, I think Canadians look like all sorts of people. That's the beauty of Canada.
Yeah, but...
I don't agree, sir.
In Rome, you do as the Romans.
Hey, but this is Canada. You can do like whatever you like.
All right.
Thanks.
There you go.
That's in Quebec.
Do you think that he was, I mean, what, like, I don't know. I think he was like, I've got a tip for you. This is like a candidate's tip. Blend in more.
I mean, in terms of the stereotypes that we have of Canadians, I would say that the, what's his name? The Sikh NDP leader was much more Canadian than the man coming up to him in the street.
Yeah, saying it was much
more. He was just
more,
like, okay, that's just your opinion. Have a nice day.
You know how pollsters will ask, would your neighbor vote for a black candidate instead of asking you directly? When they ask, would you vote for a black candidate? Most people say yes. When they say, would your neighbor vote for one? They're less likely to say yes.
Right.
Seems a little like that, the way that's couched.
Right. It's for the other Canadians to accept you. You should cut off your turban.
I also get the sense that that guy was watching Singh from like across the way for about like a half hour, just really building himself up to go do that. And so he knows he needs to approach him calmly, otherwise the security's going to move in. But then the way he leans in there is just so
gross. I got
a
secret for you that leads me to believe that I don't know that you have a microphone on. That's what that was. Got to be careful when there's a camera crew around because they're generally going to mic the person they're following. So this happened at this was in a town hall in Corona, New York. AOC had a town hall in the Queens Public Library and meeting with folks in the 14th, I think it is, right? District and talking about, I guess taking questions from the audience. I mean, just sort of like, just for a moment, like just look at the audience in this picture versus like half of the other, like almost all the other town halls we see. Like there's a just an incredible cross section of folks. And here is a woman stands up and has a point to make about climate change.
I'm not going to be here for much longer.
Oh, wait, can you go back?
No, this is where it starts.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not going to be here for much longer because of the climate crisis. We only have a few months left. I love that you support the Green Deal, but it's not getting rid of fossil fuel is not going to solve the problem fast enough. A Swedish professor saying, you know, we can eat dead people, but that's not fast enough. So I think your next campaign slogan has to be this. We got to start eating babies. We don't have enough time. There's too much CO2. All of you, you're a pollutant. Too much CO2. We have to start now, please. You are so great. I'm so happy that you're really supporting the Green Deal, but it's not enough. You know, even if we would bomb Russia, we still have too many people, too much pollution. So we have to get rid of the babies. That's a big problem. Just stopping having babies is not enough. We need to eat the babies. And this is very serious. Please give a response.
Thank you. No, thank you. Thank you. We'll go ahead.
Okay.
No, we'll go ahead. It's so, no. Yeah, no. Thank you. So I think, so one of the things that's very important to us is that we need to treat the climate crisis with the urgency that it does present. Luckily, we have more than a few months. We do need to hit net zero in several years. But I think we all need to understand that there are a lot of solutions that we have and that we can pursue, and that if we act in a positive way, there is space for hope.
I mean, she clearly thinks that the questioner has, you know, some type of, issue going on.
Yeah. She's being compassionate.
And but it turns out that, in fact, it was someone from the Lyndon LaRouche pack. As they tweeted out, Linda LaRouche pack trolls AOC. AOC doesn't rule out eating babies, is the way that they present it. And Ryan Savada, right-winger, got taken in by the whole thing. One of Ocasio-Cortez's constituents loses her mind over climate change, claims we have only a few months left, et cetera, et cetera. Michael has a theory that the woman was impersonating or trying to do an impression of Greta Thunberg.
I thought it was
possible.
It's some type of weird fake Scandinavian accent.
Yeah, very.
Or she's just a weird cultist herself.
Right.
What?
Or she's just a weird cultist herself.
Well, I mean, she's. I'm going to go with.
Like that's her actual voice, is what I'm saying.
Oh, that's her actual voice.
Yeah. What's interesting is like this is going to be.
But they've done a lot of stuff. I mean, these are actually the Hitler mustache people.
Right, the LaRouche people do this all the time.
Yeah.
And, I think this type of stuff is going to become more and more prominent over the course of the campaign. I mean, I think like this type of,
performance art.
Yeah, I really do. I mean, I think like
Jacob Wohl.
Well, let's move on to Jacob Wohl.
Like,
I think, we have that, right? Oh, we didn't have it. Well, Jacob Wall, the guy who you always think, like, how is this guy not in prison yet?
No, but seriously, is he like an intelligence asset?
I don't know.
What's going on here?
I don't know. I mean, I think like there's sort of like, you know, the yes men. He could be like, I don't know, the no men. I have no idea. I have no idea what this guy's scam is. I don't know. Like, there could be somebody out there who says, like, hey, I've got a lot of cash to burn. I'm just going to see, like, what happens with this.
I think he's an artist. I think he does it for, you know, just for self-expression.
Yeah, I mean, honestly.
I think not a true artist, you know, one who's not doing it to be remunerated.
I think that's actually possible because I can't believe that anybody thinks, like, investing in him at this point is worthwhile. Here is a Jacob Wall who had a press conference, introduced the world to a 26-27-year-old former Marine who apparently is or claims to be a male prostitute who was enlisted and compensated, it sounds like, by Elizabeth Warren. And apparently, according to this male prostitute, Elizabeth Warren is a little bit rough. Let's play this.
And we should just say this is a supercut put together by Vadim, who's also behind Creationist Cat.
Oh, okay. This is Creationist Cat's supercut.
Warren was so violent that he actually...
bear with us, please, folks. Oh, Matt.
I need to know the details.
Our client here and Senator Warren was so violent that he actually obtained scars on his back. So why don't you go ahead and show us the scars there? You can see two scars here.
Wow.
That was from the Cat of Nine Tails.
And Senator Warren engaged in lesbian sex with my friend from high school using a lime green strap-on dildo. As I can remember. I'm sorry. Lime green strap-on dildo that she bought, still in the box, never used. And the distinct rubbery smell of this device was quite overwhelming. I usually see a bigger tip.
Can you give us a dollar amount?
Take it. $1,000 for just the initial, and then she paid $1,250.
Trump is a peak alpha male. And so when you look at President Trump, him engaging in an extramarital affair would be understandable, would be normal, would be average. We know that women are more hormonal than men.
Oh my God.
Well, listen, I will tell you, this may come as a surprise to you, but we're actually an apolitical operation. Get that guy out of here. He's crazy. What? But when you look at Elizabeth Warren, you're talking about a very frail, very old woman who's going to be hormonally challenged as it relates to the president. Go ahead and remove him, Lewis. Get that guy out of there. He's freaking me out. Get that guy out of there.
Your security guard isn't taking your demand. Elizabeth Warren, a dom, a sub, or like a switch?
She's very,
he probably
she's more of a dominatrix, if you understand.
What? Honestly, like, is it just, I mean, it's just performance art.
Honestly, I followed Jacob Wall from the beginning, and when he teamed up with Jack Berkman, like, that's just when he started creating just masterworks like this.
Mm. But what is Berkman?
He needed the collaboration.
But Berkman used to be like a sort of like a standard conservative talking head.
Something like that. Yeah. I don't really remember what Jack Berkman's from.
I think I got into a fight with him on an MSNBC show years ago with what's her face? Crowley, Monica Crowley it was over Deep Throat.
Oh really?
Yes.
Like I
don't understand any of that stuff.
If anything, this makes me more likely to vote for Elizabeth Warren because now I think she's maybe not such a nerd.
Honestly,
she's kind of cool.
It's
We've
favor.
All wanted to dom people in the bedroom.
I mean,
I did a TV thing with Jack Berkman once, and I had no idea who he was. And then he started saying that there needed to be martial law declared in specific cities to ethnically cleanse immigrants.
But how do they make a living at this? Like, I mean, like, I like
who's underwriting all of
yeah,
this?
Yeah, that's the thing that I find
through the
really
Warren campaign.
Right. I mean, I can understand yes. it. Like, they get hired, like one of those things like on Craigslist where you're like, oh, you know, I'll do it. For
well, it's an interesting question because I'm not sure if Wohl even solicits donations. Not that I recall.
He doesn't have a Patreon.
Isn't he?
Okay, so Wohl's
isn't he like just some rich kid?
Wohl's dad is a run of the mill conservative guy from Southern California, and probably has like a decent amount of money, but not limitless resources. Would be my guess.
Yeah.
And you know, originally what I thought was, you know, his dad was a conservative, like talk radio blowhard, something like that, and that the dad just basically brainwashed the son. And just the son is just like totally nuts because Jacob Wohl, when he first started out, was pretending to be a millionaire VC guy. There's a lot of guys who pretend to be venture capitalists because it sounds like that's what powerful, smart people do. And then that's actually, I believe.
Sam told me he was a venture capitalist when we first met.
That's how we, that's how I got
over the course of it. Yeah. Over the course of it, I guess he committed some crime and now he's under indictment. And
he's still doing this. He's not like laying low during the indictment.
So then that ended, and I guess this happened while Trump came up. So he pivoted to being a Trump guy, as so many guys did. Like
right.
Like Mike Cernovich, for instance, went from being this MRA guy to being a Trump
guy. Stefan Molyneux. Apparently
yeah.
It's hurt his business.
Yeah, and it expanded their audience, you know. And then, you know, Wohl somewhere along the line, you know, the liberals find him and then we find all his lies and everyone just makes fun of him. And then, I don't know, he just kept continually doubled down on it and then got really into these stunts once he was with Berkman. I want to say Wohl went with Laura Loomer and that alley weirdo yeah. to Minneapolis to find that the truth of Ilhan Omar incest.
Yes.
Yeah. And that, in my mind, was funded by, you know, Laura Loomer gets to go around the country doing these stunts, but she's actively soliciting donations. She actually has a cash flow from her audience. Wohl, I'm not so sure. I mean, maybe he has a handful of just very wealthy patrons, the Bitcoin millionaires or something like that, who enjoy his antics. Kind of, you ever read The Magic Christian?
Yes.
Yeah, kind of a Magic Christian type situation. That would be, I mean, that's my guess, but I do think he's in it for the love of the game. And if you've never, if you have the opportunity to see, the Wohl and Berkman show, like you should not pass up that opportunity. It's mostly in the DC area, but sometimes, you know, like when they go out to Minneapolis or New York City, you should go. You saw how much fun that audience was having.
I'm somewhat sympathetic to it. And I certainly like, I was, you know, at least tangential to that world.
Like there's no experience like being in a Jacob Wohl press scrum. And we got the chance to do that when we were at CPAC.
Oh, nice.
And then right after we got to see a full Laura Loomer show.
That's pretty good. Nice. I knew Soy Bomb.
Really?
Do you know Soy Bomb? Eric, Michael Portnoy. He was the one who on that live Dylan song came out and
the Grammys, right?
Yeah, it was the Grammys, right?
Yeah,
came out and had Soy Bomb on there, and like I always understood that because he was a performance artist. Oh. But
there's a certain, I mean, there's a certain rich complexity to what Wohl does that I appreciate. And as well, this is probably his biggest success so far because a few days ago, he did this, he said he was going to unmask the whistleblower and then he didn't do it.
Right.
This time, I mean, he has a Marine, he has scars, he has a script, it's lurid, and all the Warren people cannot resist riffing on it.
Well, right. Yeah.
Let me ask you.
I'm sure they're making up femdoms for Warren t-shirts right now.
Do you think he went out, and I'm just curious from a creative process, do you think he went out looking for a Marine with scars? Or do you think he found a Marine who happened to have scars and built it around that? Or do you think that he had the idea of a Marine with scars, found a Marine and actually whipped him.
I think he found the Marine and used the scar. It's like, you know, he found his creature, his model, and saw the scars and said, yes, beautiful, wonderful, and I'm going to work with this.
His creature.
And I don't think it's an open casting call. I kind of think it's a word of mouth. Like he hangs out with a bunch of alt-right weirdos on a Discord.
Right.
And that constitutes his base. That would be my guess.
How much do you think you would have to be paid to be that guy, that Marine guy, to come out and say that I'm a male, or maybe he's a male dog? Maybe he's actually a dancer.
Fun. Yeah,
I mean, he could be like Benjamin. John Benjamin would do stuff like that.
What is the part of this?
Booked for a gig and just send a male stripper.
That's amazing.
That's really funny.
What is the part of this? That's one of the funniest things I've ever
Cost
heard.
A lot of money.
What is the? It makes it even funnier. What was the actual? I don't understand. Even though, like, what. I guess that she cheated on her husband. Like, what's the problem here?
Well,
she had. Then she had
a G, and she had a really good.
Yeah,
time.
I was going to say it sounds like nothing but a compliment.
I don't know how you square the circle between saying she's an old frail woman and
she leaves crap out of this
beat the crap out of this guy.
Yeah,
the scars on this Marine. Yeah.
I will say that Warren.
Well, she's hormonal, so it overrides her frailty.
I will say that, you know, I said at the beginning of the year that Biden would collapse, and I think I said it on your show too. I don't know if you can officially say that Warren is the front runner now, but I mean, I would perceive her as such, and she really hasn't taken any hits in a while, you know. Mm-hmm. Like everything
she's giving him though.
Everything's going very, very swimmingly for her, including getting the wool treatment, which has been frankly a boon.
That is the best, honestly. Like it would be a very, very bold move to actually hire Jacob Wall to do something
Ooh.
Like this to your candidate.
Add more noise to mask any signal.
But yeah, this type of stuff helps big time.
See, I would hire Jacob Wall, but that's like hiring Banksy to paint your apartment.
Right. Oh, you're saying it's just overkill?
Yeah.
It's tacky.
It's tacky.
It's very tacky to do that. You got to see if he'll do it spontaneously. Will he spontaneously make up that Bernie was involved in some type of orgy where people are dressed in ISIS costumes as a potential thought?
Yeah, the money really ruins the whole artistic process, I think.
It looks like Jack Berkman actually does lobby still, which is mind-blowing.
Yes.
Is this right firm?
God knows
like,
for what.
Like getting like actual
well, maybe
clients.
Maybe he's actually like promoting. Maybe he's like supporting something like strap-on green
that's the real
dildos.
Thing.
Check Burger is
yeah,
really
the dildo was green for the Green New Deal, huh? Yeah.
All right.
You know, Jack Burger really is the perfect collaborator for this with this like this hairy Jim Jarmusch meets Better Call Saul look.
All right, let's dig into this. There's a couple of things that we should do. Here is let's start with Trump calling on China. We have that was yesterday's, right? So yesterday Donald Trump calls on China to investigate Joe Biden. And again, this is that comment, we mentioned this yesterday on the show, when Trump came out and said, called on Zelensky to investigate Biden, calls on Xi to investigate Biden, I think is his way of saying, I cannot cover this up. I've already called on him because it was reported today that, in fact, there was a call where Biden came up with Xi. And this is the way that I inoculate myself from these charges. It's not illegal. I'm saying it publicly. Really, in many respects, like, hey, Russia, if you're listening, get me those 30,000 emails. But this is retroactively covering his steps. Here is, we got a couple of clips on this. Marco Rubio today responding to it.
Needling the press, knowing that you got...
Do you think it's okay for President Trump to ask China to launch an investigation of Joe Biden and Hunter Biden?
I don't know if that's a real request or him just needling the press, knowing that you guys were going to get outraged by it. He's pretty good at getting everybody fired up, and he's been doing that for a while. And the media responded right on task.
But you're one of the loudest critics of China and its human rights abuses. I mean, is it okay for him to ask to say that?
I don't think it's a real request. I think, again, I think he did it to gig you guys. I think he did it to provoke you to ask me and others and get outraged by it. Like I said, I mean, he plays it like a violin and everybody falls right into it. But that's not a real request.
We know it was reported that Trump brought this up in a call to Xi. And in June, as according to CNN, Trump raised Biden with Xi in June in a call housed in the highly secure server. Now, I don't know why they're hiding that. Maybe there was a lot of other things, but
it's like, get smart.
This gets to that question as to whether, you know, like what it would take for a certain sector of Republicans to leave Trump. I think to a certain extent, the idea that this trade war is a function of get me Joe Biden stuff, or I'm just thinking, I'll just pay off my farmers. But here is Peter Navarro. He is Trump's trade policy advisor on with Jim Sciutto on CNN Newsroom. And Jim Sciutto, maybe I'm not pronouncing his name right, is hinting at, like, what's the deal here? Like, what's the connection between this trade war and Joe Biden and Donald Trump's determination to get some goods on Joe Biden?
He said it was an internal issue, and he encouraged both sides to refrain from.
So what's the point here, Jim?
I'm asking you, are you disappointed the president hasn't
I'm
made
never
a public
disappointed
statement
in my president. I'm never
protests.
Disappointed in okay. my president.
When you heard the president yesterday call on China to investigate an American, you and I have spoken multiple times about how China breaks international law.
Time out here.
Is this like an interrogation here?
It's like I feel like I'm at, like Adam Schiff is sitting in front of me. And by the way,
I'm a journalist. I ask questions of Democrats and Republicans every day.
I understand, but this is like an interrogation, right? So
it's an interview.
Here's the thing. This is witch hunt part two. Okay.
The president said on the White House lawn yesterday.
I sat here.
Authoritarian China should investigate an American.
Can I finish?
You have told me many times that China breaks international law. Is it acceptable for a U.S. president
to investigate
America? I've asked the question.
So my point here is, I've been in this town now for 3 years. We went through witch hunt part one for 2.5 years. Adam Schiff, sociopath, looked you in the eye and the American people in the eye, said irrefutable evidence
the president said
of
on
a Russia hoax.
Long yesterday. It's
now,
not
hang on, let me just finish. You had your hectoring. Now we have Adam Schiff saying that he doesn't know the whistleblower and everything. And now we find
what the president said. I know that Adam Schiff has become a talking point for Republicans. The president said on the White House lawn yesterday, China should investigate an American.
You talk to the president about this. What I'm telling you is that this is a witch hunt that's hurting the American people. I mean, we have 3.5% unemployment rate. Impeach that.
Peter, you and I have talked about how China is a bad actor repeatedly, and you and I have
and
both
we agree
covered,
on that.
We've
right?
covered China for
and,
years.
And would you grant me the fact that this president is the greatest president in history standing up to China? Who else has stood up to China?
All right, so there you have it.
That guy wrote a book called Death by China in 2011.
Navarro did.
Yes.
They keep so trying
he's
to
got a lot of credibility on the China hating issue.
But I, you know, this is the type of stuff where Trump is like undercutting their own talking points on this stuff, and it becomes a little bit a problem for him. Here is Trump now trying to distance himself from, and I would imagine there's got to be some evidence of Donald Trump. Maybe Bill Barr is smarter than that. You only tell me what to do when I'm sitting right in front of you. And we've already checked for recording devices. But you recall the question that Kamala Harris asked Bill Barr over the summer in those hearings. Have you been asked to investigate anybody? And Bill Barr was like, asked? Well, yes. Has it been suggested? Suggested? Somebody, I'm just trying to figure out your question. Here is Donald Trump denying that he ever asked Barr to investigate anybody.
I don't know you. That you'd have to ask. Is the Justice Department investigating Joe Biden? Well, that you'd have to ask Attorney General Barr. But I can tell you, just as an observer, what I saw Biden do with his son, he is pillaging these countries and he's hurting us. How would you like to have, as an example, Joe Biden negotiating the China deal if he took it over from me? after the election. He would give them, he would give them everything. He would give them everything. How would you like to have that? Joe Biden would just roll out the red carpet. He'd give them everything. So again, this doesn't pertain to anything but corruption. And that has to do with me. I don't care about politics. I don't care about anything. But I do care about corruption. And to have somebody take out $1.5 billion out of China, who's totally unfit. He's unfit. To have him get $1.5 billion. To have him, and now I'm hearing the number of 50,000 a month. Now I'm hearing the number of $50,000 a month is very low. It's a much higher number that Biden's son was getting per month. In fact, it's much higher. And for him, as a totally unqualified person, to be getting hundreds of thousands a month is very, very sad. So again, is the Justice Department investigating that? I just don't know.
He's such a good communicator.
It's
he really is. I don't mean that at all.
It's unbelievable. Yesterday he started out with like it's $50,000 and other things, and today it's more than $50,000. By the time he was done, it was hundreds of thousands of dollars a month.
It's pillaging, man.
Just pillaging, and it's bad for us.
It's bad.
Sometimes
for us.
You pillage, it's good for us. Other times you pillage, it's bad.
I like
for
the
us.
Idea how he's just an observer. Nobody's like I have no. I'm just watching this.
A news junkie, if you
I'm
will.
I'm the center for responsive.
He doesn't know journalism. If there's an investigation. He's just observing the investigation.
I've been giving money to Transparency International for decades.
I mean, I hire the best people, and I'm just an observer. But I think there should be maybe.
I mean, on some level, when I see this type of stuff, I start to think they should impeach him. That they should just impeach him rather quickly. Or have some type of rolling things or something, because the more they let it hang out there, the more time they're giving them to sort of speed up their plan to sort of build this fake narrative.
Yeah.
Do you think that's the case?
I mean, that's necessarily what they're going to do. They have to do that.
Do you think the Democrats should be quick on impeachment?
What do you mean, how quick? Like, just introduce it tomorrow?
Well, I mean, as opposed to, like, let's get it wrapped up before Christmas, or let's bring this thing into the spring.
Yeah, it is nearing the end of the year, huh? I mean, I don't know how to do an impeachment, Sam. I've never done one before. never put one together.
Well, this is the first book you wrote, and you did okay with that.
I did, but writing a book is not the same as organizing an impeachment.
Well, of course,
I wouldn't. I mean,
different.
Is it catered? I don't even know who to call for something like that.
Was your book party?
Was it? You were
I
there,
don't
was
know.
It?
Well, just go with what you've done. You know. That's all I'm saying. What
do you think? I don't know. Rent a bar in Bushwick. Rent a basement.
An open bar, yeah.
What do you think?
There should be an open bar.
Cleverly
absolutely.
Cleverly named cocktails.
Well, I mean, okay. So what's the alternate position? That there should be a methodical case building and with televised hearings
how many
and something
different,
like that?
How many different in articles of impeachment do you bring in from different things, emoluments and these other issues?
Well, I mean, originally I thought that it should be wide ranging. You should have multiple committees doing the inquiries but directed towards one goal. That's going to be a battery of articles of impeachment that the entire House votes on. Right now, I mean, I don't know how Nancy Pelosi intends to organize this process. I know she said a few days ago this is just going to be about Ukraine, which. Then I didn't really agree with, but after the latest round of revelations, I think that makes sense just to have a kind of central clarity
one
on the
narrative,
matter.
So
the concern is, though, you do that and, you know, that passes the House and there's a trial in the Senate and they don't remove him. And Trump says, there you go. You see, I was right. Nothing was wrong. You know, I didn't do anything wrong because, you know, I was acquitted. That would make it harder to get him on the 300 other things, probably.
Right.
Like, you probably don't get another shot,
right.
Especially if he's reelected or something.
We're going to have new impeachment hearings every month. On the first of the month, we're going to vote by the
But that's
last.
Also dangerous,
right.
isn't
right. No,
it? Because that
I
just
agree.
Means, he has carte blanche to do whatever crimes that he wants, and he gets 46% of the popular vote and gets reelected, and he's acquitted by the Senate, so he can literally do whatever he wants, which, honestly, that is the de facto position right now. That is really the state of things. It's really how you resolve that dissonance between what your conception of the rule of law is, your belief that you live in a country where no one's above the law, and the obvious fact that, yes, there is someone above the law.
Yeah. Yep.
And if that, I mean, ideally you resolve that dissonance by, you know, going to political radicalism and articulating a theory of change. But I fear that it will...
becoming ungovernable, if you will.
Yes, but I fear that it's for many people, especially like the intellectuals and people who watch MSNBC, it's just going to go in the other direction, and it's just going to become anesthetizing and neuroticizing.
I just want some good hearings where some people squirm. I want to see Rudy Giuliani
up there. Oh, yeah, we all want the hearings.
And that's, I think that it would be helpful and cathartic and politically helpful. But
otherwise, you know, okay, if this is it, this is all you need, then yeah, wrap it up in November.
Yeah, I go back and forth. I'd like to see what's going on with this IRS whistleblower, frankly. That to me seems pretty salient.
You can't impeach him in October of next year. That's not going to make any sense.
No, I think you got to wrap this up by basically going into the summer. Like, you got to get this done by the spring, and people take a vacation for the summer and come back in the fall, and you're talking about this guy. You know, the Republicans kept this guy from being held to account. And I think maybe you provide, you do various articles of impeachment, because to the extent that these congressional races and senatorial races are localized, you can also have your cake and eat it too, insofar as this nationalizes the election. Did you vote to protect President Trump or not? And did you vote to protect him on this particular article of impeachment as opposed to that one? In Minnesota, you know, the idea that, like, you know, maybe you would enrich yourself by doing the hotels sounds a lot worse than maybe some other thing that might have more salience in Maine. I don't know.
I think the, you know, you go with emoluments, go with things like that. But as long as the evidence is clear and the narrative is simple, because I think people who are even tuned out of this whole process, they're still going to intuitively understand what bribery is, what a quid pro quo is.
I agree.
Everything that's more ambiguous or just talking about colluding with foreign powers, like, everyone's tuned out for that crap.
Right. Yep, I agree. Well, listen, we are, I think, just about out of time. I'm not gonna go to calls and have people hang on there and whatnot. And Michael's got to go. He's got to gotta fix his pipes. Virgil, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Folks, we will be back on Monday, wherein we will do another show. So have a good weekend. Bye-bye.
Bye.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. Somewhere the choice was made for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in.